You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is a matter of perspective. I'm Chris from South Carolina.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska, and the subname for this episode is The Naked Lady in the Art Studio.
The Naked Lady in the Art
Studio. Yeah, that was my name. Naked Lady in the Art Studio. I gotta ask this question. Do you think maybe they're on a holodeck, and she obviously isn't too... She didn't throw cover herself up when Data walked in, but... Or do you think that's Ensign somebody from another department?
I think that's Ensign somebody soon to be expecting the promotion to lieutenant, I'm sure, after having been in front of the captain.
She was on the casting couch, if you will.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but she hasn't seen the way he drew her yet, so... Okay, Chris.
I knew something was wrong in this episode when Riker wasn't in that class, so I knew he was in trouble.
Mm-hmm. They had to schedule this from when he was off the ship because they knew what it had been like. Okay, so Chris, this is the second week in a row that you are on after you hijacked our show last week.
You know, sometimes I gotta be a pirate. It's just what I do. I have this long beard. I have this long hair. I have these pirate tendencies, you know, of freedom and capitalism and really capitalizing on people's weaknesses. And Ben, you know, he's a scalawag that I have to come and I have to fight with my swords whenever I can. So.
Ben the scalawag.
Ben the scalawag.
That's worth 5 points right there, so. Yeah, that's a five. On a scale of one to Ben, that's the way we should be doing this from now on, Doc. You think? It's now time to rate this episode on a scale of one to Ben. I think that's a great idea.
Sounds good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good.
I'll do that. Well, if you do it, you remember. Okay, so Chris, as you said last week, you are definitely one of the host on the Upper Pylon 2.
Yep.
So for those...
Got about an 8%.
Yeah, for those people who didn't like Deja Q and stayed away from it, but they certainly love A Matter of Perspective, why don't you tell us what the Upper Pylon 2 is?
Well, those people are daft, but if there are those people that live in this universe, I still love them.
Mm-hmm.
And Upper Pylon 2... is a Deep Space Nine review podcast here on the TrekMate Network, the only true Star Trek podcasting network in the UK and the world other than America. Then you know, they know about us already, right? Because we're sister podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
You're TNG, DS9.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you want to say and let your words come out.
Oh, no. How did this happen again?
We should do this. Let's do this scene.
What is going on here? Now, wait a second. Chris, you hijacked us last week, and now I hear Ben again. What's going on here?
What happened? I was supposed to be on this week.
See,
yes, I hijacked last week, but I don't know what happened this week.
That's the thing. See, I bag on the security on the Enterprise, but apparently I'm not any better. I can't keep control of this thing. So I'm sorry, Mr. Worf, that I ever said anything bad, because apparently people could just hijack our call anytime they want to now, too. Oh. But as Mr. Spock would say,
live long and prosper.
Thank you.
For real.
For real. Ben is back, huh?
I'm back.
Okay. So I was told, well, okay, so apparently you want to give a few points when you can here, because you may have to go here shortly.
May have to dip out, but that's up to my wife. And most importantly, it's up to her returning.
She's not back yet.
Okay, so Chris, go ahead and do the synopsis.
Well, that all presumes that your wife is alive and wants to take you to court or take someone else to court for your death. Because the synopsis for tonight's show is, when Riker is charged with the murder of a prominent scientist, each side uses the holodeck to show their side of the story. This is the 14th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is February 12, 1990, written by Ed Zuckerman and directed by, yeah, you know him, Cliff Bowl.
The Bowlian Bowl.
The Bowlian himself. Guest stars include Craig Richard Nelson as Crag, Gina Hecht as Manwa Apgar, Mark Margolis as Nell Apgar, Colm Meaney as Miles O'Brien, and co-star Julie Donald as Tana.
That makes perfect
Which
sense.
Which one's the beautiful naked one?
Yeah, so you weren't here for that part. That's a subname of this, the naked girl in the art studio.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That we were trying to figure out, is this a hologram or maybe is this Ensign somebody from a different department?
Good question.
But my question is, how does Ensign somebody return from being naked in front of the captain? Like, how does she get beyond Ensign after she's been naked before the captain? And that's if it's Ensign male or Ensign female with Captain male or Captain female. So I'm not trying to be chauvinist. I'm just wondering, how do you get past that point and get to the next level? Like, get the captain to see that you are a legitimate and whatever you're supposed to be on the ship after the captain has seen you completely nude.
Well, Christian, you're assuming here that being the nude model isn't actually a post on the Enterprise. This could be the full-time job.
You're right, James. You're absolutely right that I'm assuming that this is a side thing because I don't assume that any starship would bring on someone just to be the nude model for the art class.
But you have the historian on board, so I don't think it's that far out.
I guess you're right. I mean, I can't really argue with that at this point.
So do you think Wesley knows about this moment and is really pissed that he wasn't able to take part?
Absolutely.
I know Riker, I'm sure, is. That's why Riker's so pissed off on the station. You know, women sometimes are the cause of murder. So I don't know why that didn't get brought up in the trial. But okay, so what do we think about this in general? Me, I think this is going to be a very quick show because there's really not much to talk about. If you think about it, yes, there is the trial. There are three scenarios that get played out. Oh, actually, three and a half scenarios. After the first scenario, that's when the investigator gets to give his idea of the ending part. Then we get the wife's scenario, and then we get the assistant scenario. And I'm sure we agree that one of those scenarios is complete bull. There's no way that could have possibly have happened that way. So we can get rid of that testimony real quick. But I like this use of the holodeck. It didn't screw up. Although technically it did screw up, but it couldn't have been helped. Chris, what about you?
I think this episode is really, really, really great. But I think that you're right that at the beginning it kind of gives itself away as to what it is as an entire episode. But then you have to just kind of buy in, which goes back to my argument in every episode I've ever been on and every review show that I've ever been on. And that is, you have to buy in. If you don't buy in, then the episode is worthless to you. But then at that point, is the series worth anything to you? Because in my mind, if the series is worth anything to you, then you want to buy in as often as possible. So I'm sold on TNG at this point. I think that this episode fits in quite well.
Hmm. Okay. Pirate Ben, what about you?
I guess I'm just left with the question of, I mean, if it's all a matter of perspective, then what's the truth? I guess we'll find out.
That's true, because, you know, it's speculative, though, if you think about it. Let's flash all the way to the end. It's still speculation. It's just a speculation that makes a lot more sense than what the investigator thought. But I don't think we'll ever really, maybe we've seen the truth, but there's no finality there.
Well, not some people hijack. Argue that the truth is always a speculation.
they would be atheists and skeptics. But I am curious, before I hijack James too much, what do you think, Chris, draws you to this specific episode? Like, why did you choose it?
I chose this episode because I'm a huge Riker fan, initially. Okay. So I chose this episode, I don't know how many months ago, Lou, but I know that I chose it because this is the first episode where I feel like Riker really kind of comes into his own, and he gets beyond just, I'm going to lay with everybody, Riker.
Mm-hmm.
And the laying with everybody becomes a plot point, but also Riker is more than that, and this episode proves it.
Okay. All right, Doc, how about you? What are your thoughts on this so far?
Okay, this is going to be difficult because I think this episode sucks. I really do.
Yes! That's what I love.
I don't like this episode at all. I think that I don't think it's doing anything clever. To be honest, I think it sets up this idea of a matter of perspective, and he said, "Oh yes, you could, you know, there might be different ways of viewing things." But at the end, it just throws it around and says, "Ah, no, you're both wrong." I don't really get much out of it. I think that there's a moment that I had even forgotten where, you know, the twist comes at the end, whereby, you know, they realize that a recreation in a holodeck is causing problems, which I just couldn't buy into at all. And actually, picking up on something that Chris said, and it's something that I've mentioned as we've been going through the rewatch, I'm not convinced that I'm a Riker fan. I don't think I like him, and I don't think I like the character of Riker, which is completely at odds to when I first watched TNG, because I wasn't a Picard fan. I didn't want Picard there, and I've mentioned in the past that I was, you know, convinced that as Best of Both Worlds got going, this was the convenient way to get rid of the boring captain and get Riker put into that place. But rewatching, and perhaps it's now that I'm older, I'm completely sold on Picard almost from day one, and I've not been convinced that Riker is anything other than, you know, a relatively mediocre character. And you know, from the moment he appears on the bridge looking like a puppy sitting next to his own doo-doo, I don't really care about him in this episode.
That's an interesting description.
I will agree with the doctor, though, that in my perspective, I haven't made up my mind about Riker yet. So I'll be interested to hear both Chris and James' side. I mean, because I feel pulled both ways. Like Chris spoke, I felt pulled towards Riker. James spoke, I felt pulled towards that aspect. I mean, is he good or is he useless? That's an interesting question.
Well, is any human useless? Would be the
question. Well, is he essential or is he useless? I mean, that's the question. I mean, can Riker be replaced by anybody? I mean, or is he necessary to the show?
I think if Riker could be replaced by anybody, they would have replaced him at some point in the series. But he couldn't. And then even in the end, when he was replaced by Data, he wasn't truly replaceable. So.
Mm. Yeah, but in this episode, you can't replace Riker because we know he is a womanizer. So I think he had to be the suspect for this based on the second scenario of what she said happened. Because honestly, I could kind of see it.
So Riker is the lascivious guy here, but if this was season 6 or 7, we could have easily seen Picard take this role, because even though Picard is not seen as like that guy who's Kirk and slept with all the people, he would, if anything that we saw in seasons 5, 6, and 7 was true, he would sleep with this woman, maybe, if the right circumstances were there, which seemed to be the case with the Riker story here.
Right, except for I would never believe that Riker would force himself on anyone. That's where she's wrong.
And that's the thing. You wouldn't believe that Riker would force himself here, and you wouldn't believe that any of our characters from our main cast would. Mm-hmm. Maybe Geordi, because Geordi's an asshole, we agreed on last episode.
Okay. Okay, so we're at Tanaga 4, where we just received an update from Dr. Apgar and his development of Krieger waves. They fuel starships, pilot shuttlecrafts, make the best toasties, improve the taste of multiple varieties of tomato soup. They can scrub plasma conduits, teach dogs how to be house-trained, you know, which really raises an interesting point, because we make our dogs go outside to go potty. So what does Porthos do when he has to go? Do you think, you know, he has a doggy door to the outside of the ship and he walks out there and does his thing and comes back inside? No, I don't think so. So we'd like to know what Porthos does. But forget Porthos and let's go back to Krieger waves. Doc, school us. Did you understand what Krieger did you understand what Krieger waves were, or the idea behind them?
Okay, it's supposed to be some type of very much a focused kind of, you know, focused kind of radiation-y kind of thing, right? Is what they're trying to do, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't really. Here's the thing, you know. Every now and again, I'll say that the science that they're trying to put across is good and it's been faithful. And then other times I'll moan about it. And very, very rarely it's actually to do with the science. It's often more to do with, it's not necessarily how the science itself, it's more kind of like the scientific method and the respect for, you know, evidence-based stuff and why things should work and why things shouldn't work. So when they say, hey, we've got Krieger waves and we're going to develop this new source of stuff, that's fine. I have and no real problem with that. Even when they start talking about the lensing and how they need to focus it, that's fine. The big problems that I have in this episode with science is when they start saying, oh, and the version that we happen to have replicated on the holodeck does exactly the same thing. I'm out, because that's just nonsense. Mm. So Krieger waves, fine. I don't have a problem with them.
So Geordi's back on the ship, and Picard wants to know what's going on. Where's Commander Riker? Oh, he was asked to stay behind for some reason. So do you think Geordi really knows has an idea what's going on at all?
No, of course not. He's Geordi.
Actually,
I don't know.
I got the impression that Geordi was not sure which side to play.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, he's got his duty to his captain and to the truth in his Starfleet officerness, but he's also got his duty to his friend, you know, the guy he plays poker with. Yeah. So when I saw Geordi speak, I saw him torn.
So in other words, Geordi was trying to say, I ain't no snitch, but couldn't say that to him. Ain't no snitch.
I ain't no snitch.
Snitches wind up in nebulas.
Come on, man. Snitches get stitches. Even in the future.
Even in the future. Oh, man. Okay. I didn't realize you shut your video off, Chris. I'm like, you have been still... You've been looking like that for a long time. All right. Ventriloquist Chris. Okay, so... Do you think, I guess in transport, we never really understand if the person is alert and conscious. I always thought there was no way, but Barclay showed that there is. Do you think Riker had any idea the space station exploded?
Well, he says that he doesn't. And actually, is this one of the first occasions of the trope that they use fairly often, which is that, you know, the ship will explode, but they would have caught them in the beam at some point before the explosion. And you've got this, like, potentially up to 20, 30 seconds window during which you can still be beaming them across, but the explosion has effectively taken out where you're beaming them from. I haven't just spoken this out loud. I think they do that in the first season Klingon episode as well, Heart of Glory. But I never quite, well, if anyone's comfortable with transporter physics anyway, I'm never quite comfortable with the idea of them having the idea that the space station explodes and it's, oh, have you got him? Oh, he's just coming over. He's coming over very slowly. Hang on, nearly got him. And here he is. And that always bugs me.
Would I be correct in expecting some parts of the station to have joined him in the transport? And that, you know, when he finally arrives, something flies towards O'Brien because the beam did get a little bit of what was exploding.
It kind of depends on what you believe the transport is actually beaming. So if it's just the person, or whether it's just, you know, the person and like the air and the rest of the stuff around him. Because I think we don't really see that many examples of it being kind of the block of space around the person. We always see it as being a quote-unquote the person. But that doesn't quite make sense, because your clothes always come with you and the air in your lungs always come with you, and lots of, you know, the stuff that's close enough to you that you need to have it brought over comes. Well, frankly, the stuff that needs to come with you for plot comes, and the stuff that doesn't come with you gets left behind.
Okay. All right, because I'd be curious why Wrecker didn't have maybe one burn mark somewhere. And they pretty much figure out that they believe Wrecker did it almost instantly. Maybe Geordi planted a bomb somewhere.
So it's a perfect crime. It wasn't Riker after all. It was Geordi.
Right.
It's always Geordi.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So Chief Investigator Krag is here to take Riker into custody. So he comes on the bridge, places him under arrest when Picard interferes and says, no, hold on, let's just take this to private. But that he takes the investigator into the ready room and leaves Riker on the bridge. So I thought, while Riker's on the bridge, I mean, couldn't he, like, flee the jurisdiction in a shuttle? Because everybody can get a shuttle out of the ship. Be self-destruct the ship, kill Wesley Crusher, terrorize the village, schnog Deanna, Beverly, Guinan, and four unnamed crew members on Deck 27 in the time it would take the investigator to take him back into custody.
So a bit of the, if you're going down, you might as well go down fighting.
Right, exactly. But no, he stays on the bridge, and as soon as Data is called into the ready room, you see Riker going, what's going on in there? I thought that was funny. He's standing outside there. What's going on in there?
Let me ask a question, because I'm not convinced he does a very good job, but does Jonathan Frakes play Riker well in this first couple of scenes? Because I honestly thought he looked, I thought it was kind of very much over the top.
No.
And you know, why wouldn't he have just come straight back to Picard and told him what had happened and laid out his cards? I thought he was being far too suspicious, and he was putting across too much suspicion for someone who's supposed to be innocent, in my mind.
Right, except for, no, I think he was playing it right, because he can't believe this is happening after what... He's just mulling over what happened on the space station, and then he finds out that thing exploded. What the hell? Is it something I did? Or and what you tell the captain, well, you're stuck with, and he has nothing to give him. But And he does say, you know, yeah, I'm a little pissed off. It has nothing to do with what happened on this station, though, but... It has nothing to do with the explosion, I'm sure. Maybe, maybe not. But then there's that point when Picard says, I think you'd better tell me everything prior to his arrival. So it makes you wonder, since they're still on the bridge when the investigator comes on, did he actually tell him a lot? Or did Wesley get to hear what happened? Or did they take it in the ready room and come back out? So what do we think of the investigator?
This is actually something I wanted to talk about, because I dislike this guy immediately. I dislike everything about him. I think that maybe what they're going for, because this guy just comes off as an awful human being in general. And I don't know if I could put my finger on it, because I don't know that he does anything that's really awful. He just comes off like as smarmy and awful.
Arrogant.
And I can't. Arrogant, I think, is a good word. I don't like him. I don't like him at all.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I think one thing that I would like to note, and maybe we should give this episode a pass because it's one of the first times in Trek, at least, or at least in TNG Trek, that's been done. I don't like it when Picard says that, in our world, a guy is innocent until proven guilty. And then the other guy goes, oh, how interesting. In our world, he's guilty until proven innocent. And because I think I get the impression that the writer thought that was a lot cleverer than it actually was. It comes up too often, and it's almost the basic, it's the basic switch that you do in order to make it, hey, isn't this a crazy, crazy judiciary system, blah, blah, blah. And I certainly got bored of that by the time, by the time we're out of Trek in like 14 years from now. Mm. And I know that this is an early example of it, but it's still, I don't think you need to have stuff like that thrown in your face for it to be a difference in cultures. Because frankly, nothing about the difference in how the justice system works between us and the aliens is actually relevant at all to any of it. So it's almost just a throwaway line of, hey, aren't these dudes crazy? And I didn't think it added anything.
I think that's a really, really good point, James, because it does not play into the episode, the fact that their justice system is exactly opposite of ours. That was kind of a missed opportunity in a way. They really could have played with that to a higher degree. And this is an early example of it. And they do show that better later.
I mean, so if we talk about episodes like Tribunal in DS9,
right.
It's fantastic. And it's all pivoted around those ideas. Whereas here it's just like I'm a fountain of good ideas, and it just doesn't go anywhere in my mind.
No, I am with you all the way through and through, because the minute you said it, I went, yeah, who cares what their justice system is? That's not the point. The point is witness testimony. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. Who's right, who's wrong. But Chris, you kind of alluded to this point of like, you don't like this guy. And as you know full well, how I feel about things. We trust what we see. Why don't you think you like him very much? Is it his speech? Is it the words he says? Or is it his look?
That's an interesting question, because I don't have an answer. Mm. It's this internal bias against him. And I'm not sure where it comes from, and I'm more than willing to take any assessment as to where it comes from.
Well, like I said, he's arrogant. Plus, he just wants to—he wants to pluck Riker right off the ship before they have a chance to turn around and leave.
He is perfectly symmetrical, though.
He's not a bad guy as far as like visually. Right. He doesn't stimulate me to I hate that guy. But then neither does, like, let's talk about one of my favorite movies, Fargo. Neither does the character, the husband in that movie, which I can't remember his name right now off the top of my head, but he doesn't automatically make me feel awful, but as soon as he starts talking, I don't like him.
Yeah,
and I don't like him in any way as the movie goes forward. And as he does everything he does, I don't like him. And this guy has a similar bent on me. Like, I don't like him from the get-go. And then everything he does in the episode makes me not like him even more, because he seems to want to cut corners and do all these other things that I don't like.
Well, yeah, there you go. The only thing I can pick up on is that he tries to immediately drive a wedge between the two people that should be in concordance with each other, the captain and the first officer, right? Like the first officer should follow suit with the captain's authority and be in step and toe, and the captain should completely trust the first officer without fail. Yet this man is trying to drive a wedge between our two most, highest authorities on the ship. So, because I think he says somewhere in there, like, are you sure? He says something like, along the lines of, you know, is that a fair question, or do you have a fair perspective, Captain Picard? Like, he's questioning Picard's objectiveness in assessing the situation, like being able to determine Riker's guilt, because that's apparently what Starfleet procedure and policy is. The captain decides, you know, should the person be extradited or not.
And nobody can question Picard.
Well,
okay, well, done. Let's end this
episode. There you go.
What if we could end this episode right now and Picard says, no, you're not getting him. End of story. Have a nice day. Do you think...
it flies off?
Yeah, I mean, there has to be an appeal process. I mean, do you think Starfleet would have caught up with Riker and brought him back? Or is the captain's final word final?
I wouldn't say the captain's final word is final, ever, but I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Anybody else?
Picard 2016.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't seen my shirt until now?
I just noticed it. So now we know who's going to be president in 2000.
Picard.
Unfortunately, man. He wasn't born in America, so he, you know, Picard can't be president.
He's been a citizen for at least, what is it, 14 years?
That doesn't matter. You have to be a natural.
It doesn't matter for president. That's right. You have to be naturalized. Right.
Natural.
Well, I mean,
that's stupid. Technically, it's a stupid rule. We should change it.
Yes.
Technically, Picard's the fictional character, though.
Well, but then, you know.
Where's Patrick Stewart from? England. So, more important things. James, I've seen on the forum that you're coming to Vegas next year, right?
He's trying.
Oh, I'm trying. I'm really am trying.
Okay, I respect that. Lou, are you interested?
I wish.
You wish? Oh, okay. Well, that means a no. Chris, yeah or nay?
Yes.
Yes!
No. Hold on. You said okay. Chris. I said yes. I have four kids. I am a public school teacher.
Yeah.
So I will let you extrapolate from that what you will.
So no.
Dang it.
Not only does he buy school supplies for his kids, he ends up having to buy school supplies for other kids. I know how teachers are like.
I work.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to decide if I'm going to go or not. No, I'm just curious because I'm going to show up if and only if the UK people show up or if new people, just in general, new people show up. Otherwise, I'm not going. So I'm just curious in general. That's all.
I want to go. And okay. If somehow I could save all my Christmas money and all my excess money from my second job, I would love to, but I don't see it happening at this point.
Well, James, if you do go, if you like, you know, finally get your tickets and like solidify the fact you're going, please post on the forums because that way I know, that way I will know to plan to go no matter what. That's all.
Hey, and I mean, actually, I was talking to Lou about this a little bit before we recorded, and the main issue with me going at the moment is that the website which I have to go to in order to get tickets is so crappy, it won't allow me to give them money in exchange for a ticket.
By the way, I will say... Sorry, go ahead.
No, and I have been trying, and each of the packages they put up online, you know, I would buy in an instant if I were able to just get onto the website. And it times out, and there are problems accessing it at most times of the day. And it's, you know, there are a lot of issues that have been reported by others as well on Twitter, et cetera. I think there's still the vast majority of the tickets haven't gone up because they're just selling the, you know, the stuff close to the front, et cetera, et cetera. So hopefully when the floodgates open, everything will turn out okay. But I have been somewhat frustrated because...
Let me just say this as someone who's been there twice. Dude, you don't need those packages. And the reality is, like, the way just by process, like, in function... You can get great seats so long as you wish to wake up early. Like, you don't need to have the reserve seats because those are only for the center aisle. And there are three aisles, like, per se, like three major aisles. And the two right, the left and right aisle are pretty much empty. They're not reserved seating. So as long as you get there early, you can get way up close. And because I always buy my tickets like when I show up, like I just buy them at the front counter. I never pre-purchase nothing.
But when you're flying international to get there.
I'm trying to say, though, my point is though, like you don't need to do that. Like it's actually cheaper to not buy the packages. Like you can individually purchase all those things. They'll let you do it.
Assuming they could accommodate you at the time.
But that's the point, though, is like, that's nonsense, dude. They'll accommodate you, man. Like, if you give them your money, they'll accommodate you. There's tons and tons and tons of room. Like, there's no, like, restriction on that. It's just the restriction is how many people are willing to pay, not how many seats they have. They always have empty seats, is my point. Just so you know, James, like, that's all I'm putting out there to you. Like, don't fear, like, you won't have a seat or nothing or have the opportunity if you can't get, like, the, quote, platinum package, because that does not matter, dude. Like I show up every time, just that the day of, and I get whatever I wish, you know. I'm gonna mute myself.
You know, if that was the case, that's one thing, but when I look at this captain's package for $689 and I think, well, no, oh, no way, no way possible.
Yeah, dude, I pay each day $40.
Yeah.
And I go do whatever I want. And if I want to pay more, I pay more. And if I want to pay less, I pay less. And it's just about how early do I get up versus how much time do I want to spend in line. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. Anyway, whatever. Sorry. I just want to see Dr. James Roberts. That's all.
Well, I am kind of, you know, I do know that we've got, you know, there is kind of a bit of an interconnected family here, right? With the, sure. You know, the Checkmate guys and, you know, and it's international as well, not just necessarily in England and in the US. It's obviously the big one next year, and I would actually like to see a lot of people. And you know, for people that are either on shows or have been, you know, contributing, and you know, we will share, you know, we will share enthusiasm for the show. And I think that I would certainly encourage everyone to go if they can, but I also think that it's probably worthwhile for people to actually put their hands up and to mention that they are going, because I do think that the more people that are going, the more it's going to snowball, the more enthusiasm of people going to have to get along and meet people. Because the worst thing is that there are 50 people sitting there, everyone thinking that they're the only people that are going to make the effort to go that they're going to know about. And I think that if we can get kind of critical mass, I think it's much, you know, much better for everyone.
Well, let me just say this much, James. I second that motion on the forum. if you understand my meaning, you know, here's my hand. I'm raising it. I second that.
Okay. All right. Well, then whoever here is the biggest rock star of the group is the one who should make a post saying, I'm going. Are you going? Who's all going? And we could try and figure out a place to meet when we're there.
There's no question that I'm the biggest rock star.
Well, then you should put that out, because if I do it, I put a little thing about my. Did you guys see the video about my dog trying to keep the Netflix to herself?
Yeah, I did see that.
Well, then, if you hadn't seen that, then I obviously am not important.
No, I had nothing to say to that, though. I mean, like, what are you going to post to that? I know. Yeah, that's all.
Got to have something. But, I mean, you could give it a 5.
You know what's funny, by the way? I switched completely to Apple products. You cannot plus one anything if you have an Apple product.
Oh.
So, like, an iPhone. That's true. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I can't, like, plus one anything. Like, when I have my Android, I could plus one everything and, like, click I think you're the best type thing on the thing and make it the post green. I can't do that anymore on an Apple product. It's kind of unfortunate.
It is.
Okay.
Just want to say that.
It's unfortunate that you switched all to Apple products, really.
Oh, man. I had to Clash of Clans that shit up, dude.
All right.
I had to fall suit.
anyway, I'm sure Doc is now going, if these tossers don't get back to this show.
All right. My microphone's muted.
All right. Here we go. Okay, so now we have Enterprise CSI. Don't we? Anyone?
We do. And let me just say that I think I'm probably going to be the most critical of this episode, but I like the way that they pose the recreation, and they do use the holodeck, and they use Data, and they use the testimony. And again, it's probably the first time they're going to do it this way, but it is a welcome break from, you know, flashback memory flashbacks or anything like that that goes on. So at least it's nicely and logically staged.
Okay. Now, we know what the holodeck, we know the end of this story. Everybody knows the end of this story, so I'm not spoiling anything. You've forgotten. Okay. So it seems like whenever we go on the holodeck, we always make cracks that the holodeck is broken or it does something wrong. So do you consider the holes in the walls throughout the ship that the holodeck helped create? Do you consider that a breakdown of the holodeck at all, or just what the thing was designed to do?
It's not a holodeck problem. It's what it was put there for.
So in other words, the people that are investigating why this hole is here, do you think they stumbled onto it too late, or they should have figured it out from the beginning?
No, I think they kind of... I think the investigation on that side, it seemed to me to be quite reasonable. They stumbled upon it, you know, soon enough, and they realize where it comes from. You know, the only thing, of course, is that it happens to kind of coincide with dramatic movements in the courtroom trial kind of stuff, or at least the hearing for extradition. So I don't have a huge amount of criticism for that.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing. So, you know, we didn't have a crew member with a hole in their chest because they were standing in the wrong place at the wrong time. So. Okay, so in the first simulation, Mrs. Apgar is the one coming on to Riker. Now, this is Riker's. Wasn't this Riker's testimony on what happened? Which is interesting because here in America, it's usually the prosecution that gives their case before we give our defense. So Riker being the first one saying, this is how it happened. She came on to me. And I tried to push her away because I'm not into married women type of thing. But that was where our first simulation goes. And this one, let's talk about the simulation. Mrs. Apgar coming on to Riker. Well, she's alone with her husband and their assistant. Is it possible, is it conceivable that Mrs. Apgar started coming on to Riker because, well, she's just not interested in her husband anymore?
I think it's possible. I am slightly amused by the fact that I think even under Riker's own evidence, I think he still comes across a little sleazy, to be honest. I think it's possible.
Chris?
I don't think he comes across sleazy. I think he just, like, he's telling his story truthfully, and there were some things that actually happened that were a little weird to him, and you know, it is what it is.
Okay. Ben, are you with us? No. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here, of course.
Yeah,
anything? I'm here, of course.
Sure, go ahead. Anything?
I think Jonathan Frakes' acting is failing right now. That's what I think.
Okay. Now, did you guys find the investigator's speculative theory on how this could have happened convincing, or do you think... Well, that makes perfect sense.
So I have a question on this, which is, did the away team beam over with a phaser? Because if they didn't, then clearly this... And I love the name, you know, hypothetical one. But if they didn't beam across with a phaser, then you can disprove this straight away. If they did beam over with a phaser, why the hell are they beaming over to a science... lab with a phaser. It makes no sense. So that's something that I thought was a bit iffy.
SOP, man. Standard operating procedure.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little phaser, not the big ones.
And I mean, I carry a pocket knife almost everywhere I go aside from my actual job, but it's still in my car. To me, it's kind of like that. You carry the tools that you need for the most jobs possible if you run into them. So I could see him carrying a phaser, not necessarily to even shoot anybody, but maybe to cut through a rope or a tree, or if someone's leg gets injured, you could cauterize the wound. I mean, it's just, to me, it's Boy Scouts 101.
That makes sense because I'm with Chris on that. I mean, I have a knife at all times, not for personal defense because that's ridiculous, but simply because there are many uses. There are many functions for that pocket knife. So I can understand why they would bring, why that is SOP, in other words.
Well, he gets it out pretty quick, though. I mean, it just seems to come out of nowhere. Because you don't see it on him until it's in his hand.
So are we talking about the prosecution's evidence?
Yeah.
Here?
Yeah,
the hypothetical talking about the phaser. You can whip it out, Doc.
Yes.
Whenever you want.
Yes.
But that brings up an interesting point, though, that, you know, evidence being what it is can lead you whichever way your perspective leads you to be. So, I mean, if you have my perspective, then of course he has a pocket knife. You know, I mean, why wouldn't you? But if you're not of that mentality, then why would you ever carry a pocket knife? What's the point? Mm.
But isn't it able to record what kind of beam was used, whether it was a phaser beam from the Federation or whether it was his own beam from...
Yeah, it does seem to be able to do that. Yeah.
Would a phaser be able to actually have a record of its firing, though?
Hmm.
So wouldn't that be a standard thing that you'd probably expect so that, you know, a phaser would be able to tell you it has been let off?
That's true. Today's tasers do. Hmm.
That's a great question to ask, James, mostly because it's a that's a technological question of, you know, does technology supersede human error?
Hmm.
Which is interesting to think about.
Hmm. But would the investigator have accepted, you know, according to our records here, this phaser hadn't been fired at all? Okay. All right. So here we go. Simulation. No, oh, yeah. Now we're getting some kind of radiation that's putting holes in the parts of the ship. But at this time, they didn't quite figure out. They don't know quite what it is, but we'll keep checking. Now, simulation number two, Mrs. Apgar's testimony. It makes Riker look like the cad we all know he really is. But I noticed in the simulation, she herself, the way she programmed the simulation and the doctor, it even looked like they were hiding something.
And actually, can I just, the first thing I'd like to point out here when they sit down, you know, the Mrs. Doctor woman, and they said, okay, you know, we're not going to go through any formal introductions because we've all met.
Mm.
And there's a point that, from a real world perspective of this woman sitting there, she'll probably be thinking, you what? What do you mean we've all met? And it's like, you know, the audience knows that they've sat through a recreation where this person's been in play.
Mm-hmm.
But the I don't think the witness necessarily knows that. So in my mind, I'm just thinking, you know, why have they been sitting here watching a recreation of me? What have I been shown to be getting up to? So I would have been a bit suspicious. Mm-hmm. And I also suspect, right, a witness in this position would have been able to sit in on the original showing, the Riker's testimony.
Yes. Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, whenever I watch, like, I don't know, any law show, Boston Legal, I bring that up a lot. I don't see the future witnesses in the courtroom because you don't want their testimony being persuaded by past testimony. So no, I would say she shouldn't be in there to see his recreation. You know what I'm saying? Because if she hears his recreation, she has the ability to then change hers to make his look more damning.
Right. I don't know where else to put this in, guys. So I want to throw this in there right now. The names of characters is always very important to me. And this particular character, or these two characters, the wife and the husband that Riker supposedly has misdone, they're Apgar, which we all know that the Apgar is the test. Well, maybe we don't all know, but the Apgar is the test here where your child is assessed to see if they are ready to leave. And I haven't done a lot of research on the scientist himself, but as I'm thinking about this idea of life and birth, and then this whole story where these two people named Apgar, and one of them dies, and the other one is saying that it's your fault for him dying, and he's saying, no, it's not my fault, I didn't do anything. It makes me consider this idea of birth and what it means to be alive and what's what's it worth to be alive? And I wonder, why do you think they named these guys Apgar? Because everything as a writer to me has to have meaning. What's the meaning of Apgar in this situation?
No, I'm not seeing it.
Nothing?
I see nothing.
You don't see any reason for that?
Oh, no. There's life is either meaningless or meaningful. And if you're not committed to suicide, then you agree life is meaningful. No, I feel what you're looking for there. I don't know exactly what the writer's intention was. However, I do understand that there's a point to them being named the way they were.
Right. That's my point, there's always a point.
Yeah, there is a point, of course. I mean, they're intelligent people doing, you know, intentful things. I don't know, though. I haven't really thought about it like that.
No, I can't come up with anything for Apgar in this situation. Are we saying the episode wasn't quite ready to be put out? It needed a...
No, not at all. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is I'm saying that the author of this episode had some intention. And I think that we can't fully grasp at what the intention was for the murder, for the plot, or whatever it is, until we really look at every little minute detail. And this is something that I'm constantly saying on Up 2 as well, is people will be throwing shade at an episode and they'll be throwing all these things out. And I'll be like, well, what about these small details? Well, those small details don't matter because this overarching thing is a problem. Well, these small details do matter. They always matter. And the fact that we don't understand them, because I'm with you, Lou, I don't have a clue what Apgar might mean to this, but they were named Apgar for some reason. I have to believe it. Because Apgar is not some random name. It's not a name. It's not like Smith, you know?
Right. No, and I feel you on that because he says specifically, the writer says specifically, he writes the lines for Riker to speak that this is my testimony, it is the truth. But he titles the episode A Matter of Perspective. So Riker's testimony is his perspective. Well, is that the truth? Well, obviously not, because the writer says there are three different perspectives and somewhere in there lies the truth.
Yeah, doesn't Troy at some point in this episode say that she can't discern that either of them are lying?
Exactly. That's
yeah,
exactly
that's
right.
Throws me off.
But here's my problem with the episode, because I would really like this to be an episode where you had, you know, Riker presenting his truth and the other defendant, people involved presenting their truth, and for it to be, you know, there to be an actual, you know, rigid truths that has been distorted by different perspectives. But I just don't think, I think there's too much of a gap there. I honestly think that they are, you know, I don't think it's clever enough to be able to give you a, you know, an actual event that has occurred that has been viewed by two different people and that has been interpreted in two different ways. I unfortunately just feel like they have to come down on one side or the other, because you've been required to make that decision, because there isn't this middle ground that suits both whilst distorted through their own viewpoint. So I think it must have been what they were trying to go for originally, because otherwise it wouldn't have this title, you wouldn't have the Troy line. But unfortunately, I think the episode just doesn't deliver it.
No, I see that. Yeah, Drains, you're like, just what Chris said, I can see that as well. I mean, nothing is cemented, in other words. You say his truth, their truth, her truth, nothing but the truth, you know, so help me God. But in the end, well, obviously, none of it's the truth. But the writer never gives us the truth in his...
Does he not?
Well, but that's...
Like, at the end, we leave with this pat. This is where I kind of agree with James, in that when we leave, Riker is kind of absolved.
No, I always thought it was...
And if he's absolved, then there's some...
I'm sorry, I always thought that was reasonable doubt. Picard brought up, yes, because okay.
Yeah,
I don't know that's exactly the truth. I thought Picard gave enough reasonable doubt.
No, reasonable doubt's the excuse for...
Yeah, I thought it was absolution.
Mm. Yeah, you're right, Chris, because reasonable doubt is just the judicial excuse for we can't make a determination, so we absolve you of your guilt. That stands to see more discussion.
Let's go ahead and talk about the end where they come up with this theory. The only thing they did The only thing
who hates to jump to the end? Me.
Okay, it's almost midnight. Okay, no, what I'm saying is
okay, fine.
What I'm saying is at the end, the only thing they did was auto sequence the holodeck clock to go to the next Krieger wave output. I mean, they just made it, they fit the evidence to make it look appropriate. And I think what kills it for them is the look on her face when the holodeck or the space station dissolves into the holodeck and she's looking like, yeah, that's probably exactly what happened. I still fall on Picard created reasonable doubt. I don't really think he proved anything because they...
But that's... No, I'm with you. Yeah, keep going, Luke, because I think you're on the right path.
Yeah, because, I mean, he could have said, yes, well, here, why don't we come back and we'll change it. One, let's go back to that moment again, the investigator, I'm saying, and here, no, this still came from here. How about if they started a fire at each other? But Wrecker's a lousy shot and, shot into the thing instead of hitting Apgar. You could have changed that last second or few seconds any way you really wanted to. That's still not proof.
That's a great point, Lou, because now that just struck the heart of it, what are they trying to show? Riker's intent was not to kill this man. He did not want this man to die, so therefore Riker is not a bad man.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know he's not a bad man.
But why? Why do we know that?
Just,
that's
yeah, just from the past. Anybody is capable of homicide. Anybody.
Of course, for the right reasons, right. Yes. Or personal reasons, yes.
So,
but Riker, but for the minute that we start this episode, why doesn't Chris like the investigator? Because he casts, quote, shade on Riker's character. Why do we immediately go, no, I don't think so. We don't like this guy. You know, why is Riker worthy of absolution, regardless of the facts?
Well, I think he's worthy of absolution because he didn't do it. Like, I think the episode... At the final scene, if we all went back and we did a live commentary on the last 5 minutes of this episode, they seemed to, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but all the four times that I've ever seen this episode in my life, Ben, for you and your star score, every time I've watched it, I've always gathered that Riker did not, like, it wasn't Riker. It was the other guy doing something that caused something, and Riker was completely innocent as far as what I could read from the actual episode. Now, like we've all said at this point and at this juncture and throughout the whole episode, potentially there's some shade to be thrown because it is all a quote unquote matter of perspective. Mm-hmm. But I think the episode ends too pat, which goes back to James' point a few minutes ago, which I actually really appreciated, in that maybe it's too pat. Like, they promise this matter of perspective thing. We get this setup where there are multiple perspectives and you got to look at each one to decide which one's true. And then at the end, you realize, oh, well, the first one was true. What was the point of the entire episode? Like, that to me is problematic. But I think that the episode's pretty clear that he didn't do it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
This is another interesting thing I was just now.
Don't ever. By the way, sorry. Luke,
go ahead.
Hold on a second. I gotta take umbrage with Chris there for a second. Oh. Why you gotta doubt yourself, son? Why you gotta doubt yourself? Maybe I'm wrong. Please don't say that.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I always will doubt myself because I am the ultimate authority of anything.
Doubt is
inherent. Which I think, sir, you wouldn't take umbrage with, sir.
It's not umbrage.
There is another ultimate authority besides myself.
Of course, always. And I know you know this. That's why I have hope. Which is why I have hope for you. Which is why I have hope for you and not others.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
But, no, but hold on, Lou. Hold on, Lou. Before you get too crazy. I know it's midnight. 12:05. But this and this alone. Who is the Whisperer? The Whisperer plants seeds of doubt. And it is our allowance for him to plant those seeds that allow that seed to germinate, fester into fear. Don't fear what you know. Don't fear what you believe, and don't fear what you have faith in. Do not allow the Whisperer to change your mind. Don't question your instinct.
Well, we would make terrible jurists. Jurors.
Yes, that's case. True. That is so true, Lou. Well, I have been kicked off every potential jury I've ever been on.
Right. We would be terrible jurors because we know Riker. Whereas when you get a cross section of your community, these people don't know Riker at all. So what could he be capable of this? Well, what would he have to protect? That's the biggest thing. What would he need to murder this man for? What would he have done if everything she said was true? He came onto her. He nearly raped her. Everything the man was going to report to Starfleet was true. What would Riker have been? What would he have lost than he needed to protect by murdering him?
That's the part I can't reconcile with this episode. I'm with James on this one. I can't reconcile the fact that Deanna said everything she says is true, everything he says is true. Like I'm so lost. And then I don't feel like the ending lives up to the title and the premise. I think that it wants to be a good episode, and in the execution, it's an all right episode, but yeah. I'm with James. It's a little weird and wonky in the middle.
So one of them in Deanna's eyes is delusional because they both believe two different versions.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's the case, Luke. I've never thought about it as one of them being delusional because they absolutely believe it and it can't be true because both stories can't be true. But yeah. And obviously it's the lady who's not with us next week who's delusional because that's convenient.
No. She told me. That whatever, but that's
Oh, wait a second. Are you that right? Deanna is not in this next episode, is she?
No, that's not. I don't think that's where Chris is going.
Okay. I don't recall her being in the episode, though.
He was talking about main characters versus expendable characters. Mm.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then let's go on. So, Simulation 3. Tanya's testimony. This is the one I said could be safely deleted, because there's no way Riker's going to get his ass kicked by this old man.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, no. Picard could have said, bull. No, we're not buying this one. Deleted. Okay. So it looks like the testimony's in, and, Picard has no choice. He's going to have to let him take him. Or does he? Dun, dun, dun. Because on the comm system, we have Data saying, oh, we figured this out. And, of course, little Wesley. And we also know who killed Dr. Apgar.
By the way, am I alone in thinking that I think there's a... I think it's a bit of a leap that they make in terms of... You know, the place exploded. And that's, you know, that's what happened. I don't like the way that they have to now turn it from... You know, Riker tried to kill the dude into the dude trying to kill Riker that happened to then kill himself. So I think when I remember this episode, I thought that there was just an accident that caused the thing to blow up, and it was just poorly timed. I'm not entirely comfortable with this idea that they have to switch it around to the extent that, you know, it's not just that Riker is innocent, but it's Riker is innocent and they attempted to murder him on the way out. I don't quite see why that logic, why that had to be made.
You're tired. That's what we were discussing about. That's really not proof that he actually it was Riker was the intended victim. That's just an idea of what they did, and that's why I said it's just casting reasonable doubt on the whole thing.
No, but I think, you know, in this particular case, Wesley comes forward and he says, oh, we know who killed him. Mm-hmm. We know who murdered Dr. Apgar, and it's just... I don't think it has to be phrased in those terms.
Well, because they're convinced. They know Riker. Again, they'll make terrible jurors too, because they know Riker, and what they have come up with makes a whole lot more sense to them than the first one, which actually still makes sense to me. I could see the investigator's version being true. If Riker had enough to protect, could he have murdered him or attempted to murder him?
I think, though, guys, the writer is trying to comment on conflict. So, I mean, what is the essence of conflict? Is I disagree with you and you disagree with me and there is no middle ground. Like, we can't agree. In other words, there is no deference. There is no, yes, you're right in this aspect. No, I'm wrong in this aspect, so we can all meet in the middle. The essence of conflict is I am right, you are wrong. And if you refuse to submit, if you refuse to submit to my belief or my understanding or whatever have you call it, then the only solution is that you don't exist anymore. So the essence of conflict is mortal. It is the idea that when we conflict to a degree in which we cannot defer because we are both not capable of that, then either you die or I die. In other words, either you exist or I don't, or you don't exist. So, I mean, we watch children do this all the time. They when they have conflicts, they can't reason and have rational thoughts. Mm-hmm. They instead ostracize the other child, and you know whatever group has the most wins. So, but with older people, how does conflict resolve? Well, usually it resolves in death. I mean, that's what war is and everything else. So I think that's what the writer's commenting on.
Yeah, but Ben, we all know from our studies of literature of the past that author's intent is not always the end-all be-all.
Sometimes what you think the intent is turns out to be wrong. You were wrong.
And sometimes the author intends something that doesn't come through. And something else entirely comes through.
Well, that's because truth is irrespective of your perspective.
Irrespective of the author's perspective or
of anyone's perspective. No. Of anyone's. It does not matter the intent of the writer. It does not matter the intent of the reader. We all come to understand the truth because things that last for eternity. So songs that last forever or as long as we can imagine. Stories that last forever or as long as we can imagine. The reason they last for so long is because they speak truth. So it does not matter what Shakespeare wrote. It doesn't matter what his intent was when he wrote it. All that matters is that he captured the essence of truth. And that's what we all cling to, adhere to, understand, wish to reason through. That is the point of it. Things that are eternal or last a lifetime do so because they are irrespective of perspective.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
what you would call truth, I would call a moment. But yes.
They're the same. What you call it does not matter.
Here.
That's the reality of it, man. Okay. What you call it does not matter.
Okay. Well, let's come back to the episode in this
because
case.
You speak Islam. I speak Christian. You speak Spanish. I speak English. You speak dumb. I speak smart. Doesn't matter. We're all people. We all understand the truth.
Okay. So hypothetically, would you guys have accepted the truth? The only way I would have said Wrecker could have been exonerated completely without any shadow of a doubt is if they could have produced sensor logs that says this is how it actually happened. Our sensors recorded a beam from the doctor's position toward the because you got to figure during transport the sensors are locked onto Wrecker and should be recording its surroundings. So you would think the sensors would have detected that beam, which caused our energy shortage, is something hit our transporter beam and was reflected back. That would have been the proof.
Lou, you are searching for the truth with facts. Mm-hmm. Facts cannot tell you the truth.
Facts be damned.
Which you ask for. Facts be damned, because that does not matter. You're asking for like a record of wrongs. You're asking for a perfect example of who is right, whose perspective is correct, blah, 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 blah. That does not exist, man. It doesn't exist. Technology is not infallible. Technology was created by man. Man is infallible. Therefore, whatever he creates is fallible.
Man is fallible, so whatever he creates is fallible. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. How can a perfect, how can an imperfect being create something perfect?
There was something asinine in what you just said, but I can't
remember. Exactly. You can't argue it. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. I can't remember it. So I obviously can't argue it because I forgot it. So let's keep moving.
How about if you listen to this podcast again and then you can leave something in the forums?
I will, man. I will leave it in the comments and be like, this was what was asinine, and I'll type it out.
Oh, by the way, Ben, you really...
However, I am an imperfect man, and therefore express myself imperfectly. So yes,
as
you
all
can...
we are.
Exactly. So you can nitpick me as you nitpick all writers.
Okay.
You can, and I accept
I attempt
that.
To not nitpick,
but thank I'm you. Don't... you on this. Yeah, exactly. Well, I love you too, man. I love you too.
Okay. Uh-oh, somebody went silent. Okay, I guess that pretty much is bringing us to the end here, right? Guys? Anybody?
Is it the end?
I can't think of anything more.
Let me have a... in my mind, I don't particularly think the ending works very well. I could moan about the, and I did moan at the beginning about, I think the technical issue about them having the holodeck recreating everything about the lab just seems silly in my mind, especially considering the fact that one of the main plot points in this episode is that the Doctor was ordering more stuff to make bigger reactor core or whatever he was doing. If you could just get it done by a holodeck, then you don't need the stuff. So to me, that didn't make a huge amount of sense. Sometimes I flag these things up. I don't like the portrayal of the scientist in this episode. The idea of you've got a great scientific genius who happens to have, bad manners. I think it's already come up about four times in TNG already, and we're not really that far through it. And I'd rather they didn't have this. I'm also surprised that there are these wonderful great scientists with extremely attractive and much younger wives. That's not as true as I seem to see it in literature and in media.
We did kind of glaze over the Dacosilium thing, and that was what Picard's simulation was. The Doctor was getting paranoid that Riker was onto him, so obviously that's the reason why he had to kill him. But again, that's still speculation. There's no way to prove it, and that all that's doing is creating more reasonable doubt. So, okay. Is there anything more?
May I have the honor?
No? Okay. Doc?
Okay, so it's now time to go into our final thoughts and ratings on this episode and give it a score on a scale of 1 to Ben, with
yes!
1 being the one being the worst and Ben being obviously 5 stars.
The best!
The best.
Nice.
Now,
yeah, I had the honor, James.
Too much for his ego.
So, did the honor of going first or going last or the honor of going third? What are you asking?
No, second. The honor is always to go first.
Go ahead.
As all great debaters understand, going first matters the most. Y'all argued about this episode quite well. I didn't watch the episode before I came on this podcast, but I know the episode quite well. Mm-hmm. However, while watching it, while speaking about it, while listening to you guys talk about it, I came to understand a certain thing that the author of this episode did not fully grasp what he wished to communicate. And I think that's the failing. I think that's represented in Jonathan Frakes. I wish he was a better actor, but he's a TV actor, you know? And so I kind of got to give what that is to what it is. I mean, he's only capable of so much. So when the writing doesn't elevate him, he cannot elevate himself. So I got to forgive that. I got to forgive the writer because he wishes to talk about a very real problem. That is, we all think we know what's up, but we don't really. we all wish to accuse and call and place guilt upon another, yet the guilt is a two-way street. So I appreciate what he was trying to say. I appreciate what Frakes was trying to do. But in the end, I'm kind of drawn to Picard because he really did his best to be unbiased in the situation. He saw that Riker did wrong. But he knew that the man who was trying to protect his wife, protect himself, and all that nonsense did worse. So he took the lesser of two evils and he picked his first officer. And so I appreciate that. And I kind of like that aspect. I wouldn't call this episode great. I wouldn't call it bad. I would call it middle of the road. It wanted to focus on Riker, but it kind of didn't tell us anything new. It wanted to expose the truth, but really kind of failed to do so. But the fact that we spoke about it for like, I don't know, forever. And it led us to many different places that actually matter. I can't but help to give it 5 stars. So thank you, Lou. Thank you, James. And thank you, Chris.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was going to be a quick show. I was wrong. Okay, Chris, how about you?
Oh, man. I asked to be on this show because I love this episode. I watch it so many times. I love it so much more than that Voyager episode that tried to mimic it with Tom Paris as the requisite Riker character. I think that this episode... I wasn't going to bring up the name because I heard it so often on your podcast, The Delta Quadrant, screamed by one of your co-hosts with a parrot in the background squawking uncontrollably. Anyways, I love this episode. I love this episode a lot. And like I said in the middle of the episode, I hate the guy who's trying Riker, and I hate the guy who is the scientist. Like, they're both very annoying to me. But I think that's for a purpose. And I think the purpose is that Riker is ultimately the good guy. He's absolved of all guilt. And when we look at this episode as a whole, it has a lot to say, and there's a lot to mine from this episode. And that's what TNG is so good for, is that it gives you these episodes which you can look at and you can say, maybe they're not technically proficient, as the Doctor is going to argue, I'm sure, in a minute. Maybe they're not technically proficient as episodes or as stories, but there's so much held within them that we can discuss, and that we can mine, and that we can talk about truth, about justice, about all these different subjects. This episode, to me, is a 5-star episode all the way, every single time. I love this episode. I watch it over and over again. It's one of those few TNG episodes that I continuously go back to and rewatch because I just love it for whatever reason. I can't explain it. And I think it's a 5.
Okay. All right. So 5 for Ben, 5 for Chris. Doctor?
Yeah, I think I should probably go first because we don't want to end on a downer. actually, I mean, talking about the Voyager episode, I mean, that episode's nearly as bad as this one. I suppose I think the one thing saving it, at least it had a dog in it. So I'm not a huge fan of this episode. I think that, of course we've been able to talk about a lot of stuff because that's generally the kind of people that we are. And I think that we could, you know, we ran over an hour on Code of Honor. These things happen. It's not necessarily a sign of the quality that we're reviewing.
We're not going to take Magnum PI and do this, Doc. Come on. Magnum PI ain't going to get 2 hours out of us.
So I do think that there are bits of the story that kind of suggests that they really wanted to have a very good episode on this. And I do think this sort of concept of, you know, a matter of perspective and how you could potentially have something being interpreted by one person and by another at the same time could lead to completely different conclusions that could potentially place Riker in a position of danger from from being tried. I think you could say a lot about how your actions, whether voluntary or involuntary, are interpreted by others. And hey, you know, often at work we go on training courses to make sure that we don't offend people by accident. I think there's a lot of stuff that could be mined there. I just think that the execution is very poor. I think the idea that the holodeck actually turned itself into the generator is ludicrous. I think that when Picard presents, well, maybe this happened instead, and they go, oh yeah, that sounds right, and then just give up, to me is unrealistic. And I don't think it's a good episode. I have to say as well, I'm not convinced. I can't recall having stumbled onto a Riker episode or a Riker-centric episode that I've been very enthusiastic about. So maybe I'm just a Riker hater, and that obviously is going to put you on a bit of a back foot when presented with what we see here. To me, this is a 2 out of 5 episode. I'll give it a 2, I'm afraid. But I might be wrong.
Okay. 2 out of 5 for the Doctor. Wow. Okay, you mentioned something that I forgot to bring up, and that's the holodeck can't create anything dangerous. Well, it didn't. It's just a series of mirrors, and I'm thinking when somebody says, yes, but the holodeck can't create anything dangerous, that's a crock of crap. The holodeck is a death trap. But in this case, it wasn't intended, or it wasn't really a holodeck accident. It was actually by design that the people didn't quite understand until they had to figure it out. So I guess the holodeck really didn't screw up this time. It's the people that didn't understand how it was screwed up. I really don't have much to say about this one, to be honest. I thought it would be a quick episode, and I don't know. We certainly drew it out longer than I thought we would, but I like it. I like the use of the holodeck. I love courtroom dramas. Okay. I would have liked to have had more. I think Riker got off a little too easy, and it was just a reasonable doubt thing, but it's still a pretty good episode. It's not a 5. I'm more toward a 4, to be honest with you. So I think I'm going to go with the 4 on this one this week. So, all right. So 4 for me, 2 for you, and an average of 5 for the boys there. And you want to see where we're at so far?
I mean, in terms of the season so far? Because I've noticed that I've been coming in lower the last couple of weeks. I've been not as enthusiastic as you. Mm-hmm. But hey, next week that changes. There's no way you can't be on top, or you can't mark higher than I will for the next couple of weeks, for sure.
Oh, we'll see about that. But we're at 14 episodes with 10 guests, and I'm sorry, I'm including you guys as one guest for the average. But I'm at a 3.66. James, you're at a 3.5. But again, our guests love Star Trek more than we do, because they're at a 4.16.
So I am lower than you. I don't think I've been lower than you ever. Not on any type of decent average. So the idea of having the last 14 episodes and I'm actually coming in lower is pretty incredible. And I am of the opinion that season 3 of TNG is I think it's got the best episodes in it. I think it's so good. And there's good stuff. There's a lot of good stuff to come. Of course.
Well, we've been matching each other in the beginning episodes, but then in the last 4, I've given them 4 straight across for the last 4, and you've been given the last ones 3, a 3, a 5, and a 2, and I think that's probably why your average went down a little bit, is because of the 2. So if we had brought that to a 4, you'd be at 3.64. But you gave today a 2.
Which, by the way, I think is totally fair, because season 3 is the advent of awesome.
Oh, yeah. Our last season 2 average for me was 2.95. James was 3.07. And the guests were 3.62. And
I guess irrelevant.
Yeah, well, in season one, I was 2.71 and he was 2.77 with guests at 3.61. So, yeah, you're right. Season three has been faring a lot better than the first two.
Oh, yeah, there's no question because, I mean, as people talk about series, I mean, they talk about TNG, DS9, blah, blah, blah. They talk about, well, where should you start as a new viewer? I mean, if you skip season three, you're crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You're crazy.
I agree.
You need to watch season three of TNG. It is the beginning of awesome.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, it is.
Oh, by the way, I really love your review of The Defector. That was the epitome of greatness.
You loved what? You cut out.
I'm sorry. I loved your review of The Defector because it was the epitome of greatness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really was, man. I had nothing to say.
Well, did you hear the take two? Because the Skype call was atrocious at that time, so I had to... I had immediately started out of the gate saying, this is a five. This, straight up, I ain't going to make you wait. But then we had to do it again. My thunder was gone. So that's why I had to...
Did you steal your own thunder?
Well, because a Skype call screwed up, and we went back at it the next week, and that's when I said, well, you know, they heard me say that it's a straight up five, so I had to... That's why James... was kind of sarcastic saying, and I know Lou hates this, and that's when I started with, yeah, absolutely, I hate this. This is because
because
he was like, I know James was like, wait, what happened in the last week? But yeah.
So Chris, did you steal my thunder? Or did I steal yours? Or did we?
I think we both officially stole each other's thunder.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I'm fairly certain that we should just start our own podcast.
Absolutely.
Though I know you hate that idea.
I do hate the idea, though.
Where basically we just take all of the most malign things and we talk about the most arbitrary shit from each of them and just go off for an hour or 2 hours each time.
Hey, that's what 10-4 is for, by the way.
All right. Okay. Well, if you guys start it, since a genus.
We should have Lou as the mediator so he can go, all right, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Yeah. No, no, Ben, you didn't hear what I said before we started, before you got on this call, that ever since having you on, whenever you're on, I have to limit my nitpicks, because I know you hate them.
Yeah, you do. You'll get shit on, bro. Don't make me do that.
Exactly,
to you.
Man. Don't tase me, bro. Don't tase me.
Don't tase me. There you go.
All right, guys, then I guess we're at the end, so...
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation, an Enterprise from the past rips through time and alters the future.
I'm supposed to be dead.
Now Lieutenant Yar lives again to help the crew fight a devastating battle.
This war's not supposed to be happening. You've got to send those people back to correct this.
And one courageous team must die to save the Federation from destruction on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Join us next week as we review another season 3-5 rating episode of Yesterday's Enterprise. I've been Lou from Nebraska.
I'm Jane from London.
And I'm Ben from Nebraska. I mean, Arizona.
But he was from Nebraska.
And I'm and I'm Chris, currently talking to you from the eye of the hurricane right here in South Carolina.
Eye of the really? You think?
See you next. No, it's not the eye of the hurricane. We're on
it's the eye of the tiger.
Well, I mean, you don't think it's going to hit you, right?
No, it ain't going to hit good. Us, man. We're getting a lot of rain, though. A lot more rain than
I was going to say, if it is going to be anytime soon, you've been drinking too much. You better have somebody take you out.
Nah, man. You sleep through it.
Oh, yeah.
The electricity's going out. You can't watch TV. You can't read. You can't do anything else. Might as well go to bed.
All right, guys. Everyone, good night. And
good night.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
This is the Battle Bridge Feedback Section with your hosts for tonight, Chris and Ben, a.k.a. Carnivore J and Captain Proton.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Battle Bridge Feedback. You might think that you should be listening to Lou and James right now, but unfortunately for you, you got me, Mr. Carnivore J himself, Chris from South Carolina, and...
Captain Proton. I mean, who else do you wish to have?
I'm not sure who they wish to have, but whoever they wished, they got us, and we're like the evil genie Jafar coming out of the Black Lantern in Aladdin and stuff. So
Aladdin 2.
So we're here to read your feedbacks and such this week, and Ben's gonna start us off
with Jirok, who says, "Okay, I wasn't really expecting one of the funniest scenes in movie history appearing on the Battle Bridge. But, well, it still gets me laughing." Oh, good. Trek discussions as always. Thank you, man from France, I think. Right? France?
Sure, France.
Whatever. Franck, France, whatever. Stupid French. Sorry. I mean, how many wars are they going to lose, man? Honestly, how many wars are they going to lose?
Oh, come on, man. Are we going to start this right now? Are you going to call him a frog next? Where are you from? I mean, they helped us in the American Revolution. We have to love them, right?
Fair enough.
And scene.
Anyway, next up is...
So next up, of course, because he's second in every forum these days, is Kieran... McDuff, or as Ben likes to say,
McDuff.
I've tried so hard, my man, to bring that to every podcast that I can do, but unfortunately, I don't have your, I don't have your chutzpah. All I'm saying this week, Kieran says, is that I'm glad this episode is done and out of the way. I don't really have anything bad to say about it, but I don't really have anything good to say about it either. Isn't this just Conscience of the King, though? The wee hottie that Kirk/Riker has a thing for turns out to be a genocidal maniac hell-bent on finishing something dating back decades? Okay, so it's not the same once you dig into it, but there's definitely shared elements, right? 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 Actually, it also reminds me of that which survives in the whole one touch and you're dead aspect. But again, that's only a small aspect of it. I was never entirely sure why the Enterprise was getting involved in this whole thing. Did they respond to a distress call and then decide that not only did they have to deal with that situation, but also the underlying problem? Let's go fix the entire Gatherer problem today. Bold move, Jean-Luc. Very bold. I'm not sure you're going to do that in a very short period of time, though. That seems like the kind of thing you'd want to send specialists to deal with, as it could take months, even years. You know, someone like Reva. This episode plods along reasonably enough, and the mystery is reasonable the first time you watch the episode, but I don't think there's enough in this episode that makes it of interest on subsequent watches. So, because of that, I'm giving this episode 2 out of 5. The idea is solid. It just doesn't hold my interest now. By the way, to my eternal shame, I have no idea what the clip was from or even why it was put into this episode. Jarek clearly knows what it is, though.
For first and foremost, it's Jarek. Okay.
Sorry. My bad.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And whether Jarek knows what it is from or not, I don't know. But however, this I do know. Kieran, man, why you gotta be a hater, bro? Why you gotta give it a 2 out of 5, huh? I mean, she's hot. Riker's hot. They're hot together. I mean, the story's hot. Captain Picard's hot. Why you gotta hate on it? Just asking.
Yeah, Kieran, why you being a hater, bro?
He has been a hater. For
the last 2 or 3 months, he's been a hater on almost everything.
Why? What's up with that, dude?
I'm not sure. It's like Kieran had a sense of love and enjoyment of Star Trek, and then it's almost like the Odo version of Tak, like, turned into a puddle and seeped into Kieran's pores and just filled him with loathing of Star Trek. Because I'm pretty sure at this point that Tak loathes Star Trek.
He does loathe Star Trek, and I think I'm starting to believe, at least, that Kieran loathes Star Trek, too. I mean, 2 out of 5, 2 out of 5, 2.5 out of 5. I mean, when's it going to end, man? Kieran. Yeah, Nick Duff. Come on, man. Come on. Be more like Endicore, who says, wow, so far, season 3 has been delivering nothing but average to above average episodes. Looks like all... looks like all good things must come to an end. Still, the streak of 8 episodes that I would rate 3 or higher, Evolution gets a 3, and Ensigns of Command a 4, might just be the longest one in all of TNG. Well, that's interesting, by the way, Chris, because, I mean, I'm sure there's like a string in season 5 of TNG that is solid 4s. Like 4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4, but, you know, whatever.
Like anyway. All of season 3, 4, 5, and 6?
And yeah, whatever. 4, 5, 6. Anyway, that's only my opinion. Fair enough, Endicore, only your opinion. Since some have given 2 out of 5 stars to season episodes already. Anyway, this episode just doesn't stand out for me in any way, except for how uninvolving and contrived it is. This is not the first time Enterprise comes across two factions that have been warring for longer than anyone can remember, and it definitely isn't the last time. Except this time, Picard decides to single-handedly solve a century-old conflict in just a few days, simply because it's not too inconvenient for the Federation to post extra security at their outposts. Whatever. The main plotline is frustrating to watch. Just when our heroes have conceived the first pirate of the merits of negotiation, we have to go through the same song and dance routine once again, now having to convince the head pirate guy the B story is no better. Unlike the relationship in The Price, I didn't like Riker hitting on Utah within seconds of seeing her one bit. And as you rightly pointed out, the actual vengeance plot left to be desired. Given that no one noticed or cared that a whole clan was reduced to only 2 people over preceding 50 years. The only emotion that this episode can bring out is an intense feeling of apathy. This is best illustrated by Picard in which should have been the exciting climax as he is shown out of focus, sitting quietly in the background and looking mildly bored as Utah is being repeatedly phased to death in the foreground. Which actually is a good point because, like, Picard didn't care that his first officer was straight up killing the chick. And right. He didn't care, dude. He didn't care at all. Like, he was like, ah, you know, Riker's Riker. But whatever. Anyway, Riker beaming. Riker beaming all over all one order, ordering everyone to hold still and then proceeding to face the woman to death as she keeps trying to advance. It's like some sort of Terminator must be the most bizarre resolution to a Trek episode ever. That is not to say that everything about this episode was bad. I, too, was fooled by the Riker's tactical deception during the firefight with the Gatherers. Using the different elements on hand is an interesting combination. Shows the writer's creative thinking that season 3 is full of. Had this been later Trek, our heroes would have been nose deep in their tricorders, resulting in at least 5 new entries in the particles list on Memory Alpha. By the way, that really was a pretty sweet tactical maneuver. I think Lou and James highlighted that fully, so I'm glad Endicore brought it up.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, the episode only gets to disappoint 2 out of 5. However, I really enjoyed the podcast, especially the discussion about phasers. Previous description of hand phasers all seemed reasonable, like Dr. Crusher's overcoat catching on fire when shot by Lore, Picard killing his doppelganger, or the infamous exploding head of the poor Commander Remick. With Trek having taught us that humans are ugly bags of mostly water, I'd expect that vaporizing one body of water, one body part, would cause a steam of explosion. Copiously showing all bystanders.
Copiously,
showering all bystanders with gore. Utah's demise should have been a lot more mirror like Odo's awesome death in the DS9 episode crossover than the sterile death episode depicted. By the way, that. James went off on that whole idea that, like, you only need X amount of energy to destroy X amount of matter. and that if Y amount of energy is left over, then it should proceed beyond that which exists. That was really interesting. That was, you heard that. So that was really interesting, by the way, because I had not considered it. That is truly why, in the end, Dr. James Roberts is the man.
Well, I mean, I think that that is why, in the long run, James is important to us as listeners of the podcast.
That's right.
But if IndyCore can say, nevertheless, this episode only gets a disappointing 2 out of 5, however, I really enjoyed the podcast, then IndyCore had to enjoy something about the episode, in my opinion. And so if you enjoyed something about the episode, why a 2 out of 5 would be my question.
Yeah, I agree. He needs to up that to a 3.
It's got to be a 3.
It's got
to
be a 3.
Every Star Trek has to be a 3.
Not every Star Trek.
Okay. Maybe there's like 2 episodes of Voyager that don't have to be a 3.
And but Enterprise. Almost,
well, okay. Well, they were both written by the same people. So I guess, okay.
Yeah.
Fair. Most episodes of Star Trek are a 3. S1 is one of them that is a 3. It's middling. It's not great. But it's not awful. And there's a lot of good stuff that people could talk about out of it.
And that's true, because nothing offends you in The Vengeance Factor. I mean, there's nothing that would make you upset that you watched it.
Right.
So you should be happy that you saw it.
Yep.
So it deserves 3. Anyway, it figures that my praise for Troy's professional abilities would air after an episode she's criminally underused in. Well, having competent Troy was good while it lasted. Also, quote, disaster, it was a good episode? Question mark. It appears that there are several well-regarded episodes that I take issue with. Wait, Deja Q is just to name one? She or he takes issue with the enjoyment of Deja Q?
Hey, IndyCore, your hatred of Star Trek is showing.
Hater.
No, okay. Seriously, though. IndyCore, you have some great points.
It's true. It's true. And disaster is ridiculous because, I mean, they do. I mean, they hold on to containers while they're being sucked out into space or blown out into space. Yeah, okay, whatever. But Deja Q, dude, that's an awesome episode, man. Come on now.
Yeah, totally. Totally an awesome episode. As you'll see this week. Before. Yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
I think it's this week. I think it's, I don't know. Who knows? We don't know the temporal mechanics of this place.
It's not our podcast.
we were consigned to do the feedback for this week. And here we go. So next up, the second best captain in all of Trekmate, which we started to talk about, but I was still trying to get on the boat, as it were, when we first started talking about this. This idea that you were the second best captain. I presume that you wouldn't be so upset with it if you understood who the first best captain was.
It's not best, by the way. You is favorite.
And first favorite.
So I would say this, like, I mean, if you don't favorite yourself above all others, then you don't love yourself above all others.
Dude, I'm a crewman. I swab the decks. So I favor myself as far as my mop job goes. If I mop the floors well enough that the TV crew can come in and record Kirk, and he looks good, and he shines in the lights of the beautiful cameras or whatever, then I've done my job and I'm happy. However, amongst my crew, in which you were called the second favorite captain, the favorite captain is, obviously, Melissa. And no one can be mad about that, right?
Like, I mean, fair Melissa, enough. She is my favorite.
It's Melissa. So if you're mad about Ben being second or Captain Proton being second to Melissa, I don't know what to say to you because it's Melissa. If you listen to her long enough, you'd be like, oh, I like her a lot. She's a lot less, what's the word I'm looking for, abrasive than anyone else I've ever met in my entire life. And therefore, she can have the number one spot. I don't know. I love you, Ben, but you got to admit, Melissa is a particularly nice individual who you would want to put above yourself in general.
Well, I would say this much. I prefer to put all above myself. So,
well, you are so charitable, sir. So Captain Proton says, I don't ever feel the need to justify my opinion because opinion is based on perspective. Perspective is something no two people can fully share with each other.
For example, no two people can see the same object from the same place at the same time. So to justify your perspective forces you to accumulate the most facts, which to me is not interesting, due to the futile competitive nature of it. However, you also asked me for a reason this episode deserves 5 stars. That I can do.
For sure.
Let me begin by defining reason. Reason, colon. 1, A is A. 2, period. B is B.
Undisputable.
3, period. A is not B, and B is not A.
I mean, black is not white, and white is not black.
I mean, I'm not mad at you. My reason for this episode deserving 5 stars. 1, period. A equals meaningful expenditure of time. 2, B equals meaningless expenditure of time. So I have meaningful versus meaningless, right, Ben?
That's right.
3, Star Trek is always meaningful. True.
Can you argue?
I can't. I cannot. Some may. 4, Star Trek is never meaningless.
A given.
I agree. 5, 1-star rating is reserved for a meaningless episode. Now that is where I believe some would come into contention with your whole 8-point plot of design. However, at this point, I do not. 6, 5-star rating is reserved for a meaningful episode. Period. 7, if Star Trek is always meaningful, then Star Trek is never meaningless.
Simple logic. 8,
therefore, this episode is rated as 5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
So, you might ask, what about the nuance of the gray area where 2 to 4 stars exist? Ben answers, the gray area, simply reserved for our inability to accept the truth that life is meaningful to experience and therefore is not meaningless. So I ask, do you accept reason?
Well, do ya?
Do ya?
I never
expected you to go Clint Eastwood on the end of that. So,
hey, that's what I was not, the whole time, man.
That's not what I read into that at all. So,
do you feel lucky? Do you?
Do you feel lucky? Do you? Go ahead. Do it.
Do it. Do it, bro. Do it.
Nobody's doing it.
Nobody's doing it. That's right. No. Clint Eastwood was the man. And that's the end of that. That's the end of this week's feedback. So,
no, it's not. We actually have both the Vengeance Factor and the Defector for this week. I'm like Odo, I'm Jelly, got a slug in my belly. I can say he's dead, Jim, like the Forest Kelly. I'm like Scotty when I party, cause I need more time to get with all the honeys, at least 7 to 9. So give me Tranya, I'm on ya, and I'm gonna wrap the next feedback to read, which would be from yourself.
Wait, is that I gotta talk to myself?
Which I'll read. And okay, it says, a most excellent review. Party on, Lou. Party on, James.
Woo, 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 woo!
5 stars. 5 stars.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Who doesn't love Wayne's World?
I'm with you. Yeah. However, now you have to read Kieran McDuff's post.
Oh, so good Lord.
Who doesn't love Kieran McDuff?
Yeah, McDuff. He says, people getting their feedback in before me of late because I've been busy at work the last few weeks, getting time to listen properly and write up my thoughts as I've gone through has been pretty difficult. Even this one has taken me days to listen to. I guess I made a rod. You made a rod for my own back with feedback.
Yeah, so wait, he's the slave, right? So this is from my southern perspective. But he's the slave, and the rod has been created by himself, with which he will beat himself to then work the cotton fields of creating a feedback post that is of a
acceptable length.
Requisite length, yeah. An acceptable length.
No, right. He has done too many in a row.
He's created for himself a situation where he now has to put in
less work. Well, you know, cry for yourself, man. I got no tears for you. Anyway, on another note from feedback, I really do need to be congratulated. He needs to be congratulated on speaking English. Anyway, I'm not even kidding. My wife has told me off on more than one occasion for speaking in slang terms around her son. She seems to want to grow speaking properly. She seems to want him to grow speaking properly. I should probably want that as well. Anyway, I can't disagree. This is a fantastic episode. I think it's usually a good sign of an episode when discussions turn to the smallest of details for nitpicking.
I disagree. You disagree. Let's keep going.
All right. I know from other podcasts, it's a lot easier to discuss negative aspects of something than positive aspects. So this kind of thing happens a lot. Which, fair enough. I mean, if the podcasts are positive, then I see his logic. You're still wrong. Anyway, on that note, for a month or 4 months, I'm not sure if Picard picked up that wrong or not. I actually think it might be Lou picking up on something that's not there. I got the impression Jarak said he'd been trying to stop the war for months. By the way, do you think Jarak is intentional?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Anyway, Kieran spelled it wrong. Because he says that he'd been trying to stop the war for months. And because of that, those actions, he was moved away 4 months ago. It's two separate time periods that by coincidence sound the same. Indeed, he may well have explained the 4 months aspect of Picard in the meeting where he also told him about being an admiral, because we certainly never saw that happen on camera. I really like Jarak's character. He played the lowly officer part well and also left us wondering for the most part of the episode whether or not he was a spy. I think that shows good writing and good acting too. You asked if we'd known he was an admiral to begin with. Would that have made a difference? I actually think that Jarak being an admiral would have meant that he was better placed to steal a ship and run away. Admirals have better resources and more clearance to make these things happen, just as Admiral Kirk. When we discover that he's actually an admiral, I agree with James that it makes it more likely that Admiral's details are correct, more so than if he was a lowly subordinate. He'd be more likely to have the clearance to get the information on what was happening. However, I would also agree with Paul that it also makes it more likely that he's part of some bigger picture trying to lure the Enterprise into a trap. It's a bit of a paradox, really. I love the twist in this episode, having never been sure Jarak was telling the truth or trying to play us. In the end, it turned out we were looking for the wrong level, and it was Jarak himself that had been lied to. I never saw it coming, and indeed it's been so long since I've seen this episode that I had forgotten the twist, so it worked again. It was very sad enough. I'm not sure what his plan was, even if he'd been absolutely right and therefore stopped the war. As you said, he couldn't have gone home, as he's still been a Romulan traitor, even more so having undergone their secret plan. I actually wonder if the suicide was partly down to his shame of being taken for a ride by his own people. It's bad enough turning your back on them to do something you think is right. But when it turns out it was all for nothing, that's a very difficult thing in which to live with. That's a fair point. I mean, I would not envy that man's position.
Yeah.
Anyway, there were some other interesting aspects of the episode too. For instance, whenever I see one of those plays at the start of an episode, I generally think the lesson learned in the play is going to feed into the story later. So I again find that I agree with James. This play doesn't quite seem to fit into this episode. No, that's not correct. Because they're both leaders. Picard, Jarak are both leaders. And Data is desperately trying to understand what it is to be a leader.
To your point, though, James is also a leader, so James has to be right, right?
No, that. I'm sorry.
I'll bleep it.
All right. As for the Romulans turning from a fight after Jarak first reaches the Enterprise, I just imagine they didn't view his loss as being worth starting a war over.
I'm sure it was disappointing and frustrating to lose a defector, but there's a bigger picture. Although the whole point of Jarek's defection was the fact he was trying to prevent a war being started, then it seems odd that they wouldn't take that chance. Of course, we know they had no intention of starting a war. Really? So it makes sense in that context. Maybe Jarek should have been more suspicious than they let him, that they let him go so easily. By the way, you did notice that Ronald D. Moore straight up copied himself, right?
Are you about to hate on Ronald D. Moore right now? Because I don't know if I have the patience for it tonight.
All right, fair enough. But I mean, fair enough and all, but you do see what I'm saying. Thank you for your admission. I'm not sure I agree with you that Jarek and Tomahawk set the bar for Romulan and step follow, though. I always feel that Mark Alignment was Romulan and the neutral zone did that. You start off the whole mysterious Romulans being back after an extended period of absence. These two just seem to build on that aspect. A nuance I accept. I suggested in other feedbacks on other shows that TNG reversed the roles of Romulans and Klingons from those races in TOS, and at some point I'm actually going to do some work to gather my thoughts on what I meant by that. That's probably a topic for 10th Board one day, if I even manage to get the time to do that. I know Cena has mentioned it recently. Cena does love you, Kieran. So as I said at the start, I have to agree that this episode is terrific. The suspense lasts until the end. It's rewatchable whether or not you can remember the twists. It's well-paced. It's well-acted. There isn't too much you can pick out of it that is wrong. So it's a 5 out of 5 for me, too. And thank you, Kieran. Thank you very much.
Because as we all know at this point, every episode, 5.
Every episode is a 5 out of 5, bro. Whether you're Scottish, Irish, North American, African, does not matter.
Or if you're Canadian, like Medic1849, great review, guys. This episode is a definite 5 for me. As already mentioned, the character of Jarok is great. As for the Klingon twist at the end, I too never saw it coming. It was great how they kept alluding to it throughout, but the viewer was so engaged in the rest of the story that it was so easy to miss. Brilliant. Great review, guys. This episode is certainly one of the standouts of Season 3, which, by the way, is where TNG really hit its stride. And with Medic1849's post, a.k.a. Blair, we have Canadian perfection. And once again, you get to read Indicor. Finish us off.
Indicor says, I might be too late posting. No, Indicor, you're not too late posting because we were too late in doing a podcast. So this is to get it recorded in the show. I'm stepping over. Indicor says, I might be too late posting this to get it recorded in the show, so I'll keep it brief. There's no denying that this is the one of the top 10 episodes and deserves a 5 out of 5. I was a bit confused, though, how Picard and Worf convinced the Klingons to help, because this episode happens before Redemption. Maybe they did it using official channels through Starfleet Command and the Klingons government, but otherwise it's a bit worrisome that Picard can summon a private own army on his own behest. You know what? I hadn't thought about that, dude. How does Picard have that type of pull? I was kind of always thought it was Worf's pull, but Worf shouldn't have any pull, right?
Worf has zero pull. So he has so little pull that he can't even pull himself up from the ground to say, don't place me at security. I'd rather be... ops.
Well, that's actually, but that
or anything else.
That then proves Endicor's point that Picard has too much pull, which is worrisome indeed. Not thought about that, man. Anyway, I think it was really interesting to base Trek alien species on the Romans. For example, did the Romulan ship in the neutral zone have two commanders shown on screen? Because sometimes the Romulan legions were led by two consuls who would alternate their command each day. Knowledge we did not know. This episode also reminds me how the Romulans always tried to coax their enemies into making the first aggressive move due to their obsession of being a just war so that gods are appeased. More knowledge I did not know. It's also a shame that Trek did... It's also... It's...
one. It's a shame Trek didn't draw more inspiration from this, because in some episodes, Romulans are just portrayed as genetic bad guys or generic bad guys who happen to have a cloaking device.
Generic. It's all the same.
I had to mention the Romans because when I first started listening to the podcast back in 2011, the first one I stuck around for more than one or two episodes was the History of Rome. I listened to a few more history podcasts, but the trouble with those is that they required a 100% of your attention to follow the narrative. That's why in 2013 I switched to Trek podcasts, which aren't so demanding. Super tangent, and Decor, I hope you don't mind, but I feel that. However, I mean, your history, what you're interested in history, like, kind of is determined by what you're interested in general. So, yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but Les Brawman, or what's his name? I think his name is Les Brawman, but I'm not sure, man.
There's a handful of great podcasts that are historically based, that are based on history. And I think that the Roman History of Rome podcast that you're listening or that you started off listening to, it's a fantastic podcast, but it's not quite as good as Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. It's also not quite as good as the history of Britain, the history of UK, which both of those are really fantastic. So I think you're right, Indicor, in that it takes less mental perspicuity, whatever the word is, there to listen to a Star Trek podcast. You can still get a lot out of these history podcasts, so I would not throw shade at those myself. However, if that's what it was for you and that's your truth, I'm all for it, man.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, like, I do love my niche of what I'm interested in, and history is definitely one of them. So I understand what you're saying, though, because I mean they're dense. They're always dense podcasts, and Trek podcasts aren't quite so dense. Anyway, bottom line, what Carnivore just said. Anyway, there were a few that I tried before finding the Delta Quadrant, which I love start to finish. Something's wrong with you. Anyway, that led me to discover Patak and the Gamma Quadrant. But I admit, I have only seen about 20 Enterprise episodes and 80% of DS9. I didn't want to spoil the rest if I ever chose to watch the shows again. But I was most overjoyed that there was a TNG podcast starting up, which is by far my favorite one. It took me a while to finish listening to the other shows to get caught up to the point where I can watch episodes more or less concurrently along with the podcast. Oh, and why Endicore? That's easy. I know it's one of the more controversial episodes when it comes to its ratings, but Times Squared is my most favorite Trek episode ever. At least if you go by the number of times I've watched it. Ha! Don't have time to explain why now, though, because I must get to the shuttle. No need, bro. I get it.
I'm sorry. I was distracted by my wife showing me a slug.
You pour salt on them, they shrink.
Yeah, but there's a hurricane going on here, so all the slugs are climbing under the doorways and stuff. So.
Nah, dude. Endicor is just connecting the dots, and it's pretty sweet.
I'm very excited that Indicor is connecting the dots. I'm also very excited that every one of you responded to the Battle Bridge. The Battle Bridge is one of the greatest podcasts on TrekMateFamily.org.uk here, or TrekMateFamily.com. I guess it's TrekMate.org.uk and TrekMateFamily.com. Fantastic website, fantastic group of people. It's fantastic to work for them, and we appreciate all your feedback. And so do the Doc.
And so James. And most importantly, by the way, if you are one of those silent listeners, that I'm sure you are, because as Lewis pointed out many times, he's overwhelmed with the amount of people that do listen to his show. As we have spoken to Lou over the last few hours, we've come to understand that while he might know that you listen, he desperately desires your input. And whether you post on forum.trekmatefamily.com or you email him at battlebridgepodcast@gmail.com or you simply Twitter him at whatever James's Twitter is. As I'm at
TNG Levi. Rewatch. It's at TNG Rewatch.
There you go. If you Twitter him there, they personally appreciate that. What am I just saying, man? They personally appreciate it. Obviously, they love it. I mean,
no, that's not what I'm laughing at. I'm laughing at if you Twitter him there. Whatever, if you Twitter him there.
If you Twitter him there.
The sophomore in me says, if you Twitter anything, giggle. If you Twitter, giggle. Twittering, giggling.
You're a freaking Twitter. Anyway. Tweet him at TNG Rewatch. Because, honestly, those two guys put a lot of effort into the show. They really love what they do. And they, frankly, deserve your input. As a personally, as a silent listener, I understand your trepidation in speaking up. But nonetheless, you should add your input because it reinforces them, it renews them, and it fills them with joy. So y'all should do that.
And if you come to the forums at trekmatefamily.com, there's lots of conversation going on. There's lots of interaction going on. And Lou himself or James himself will respond to you. And, you know, if you get into a big back and forth forum discussion, Carnivore J might jump into the conversation, or I Don't Care might jump into the conversation, or Captain Proton might jump into the conversation. You never know. And so you might as well come over to TrekMateFamily.com and check us out and see the Battle Bridge for what it is, which is amazing. And we're sorry we had to we're sorry we had to pirate this entire episode.
But they were very tired.
And so are we. Well, Battle Bridge, this has been amazing. We've loved being your hosts.
Woo! He's Carnivore J. I'm Captain Proton.
He's Captain Proton. Audience. We love y'all to death.